some old chains, almost some old Alice in Chains.
Kind of, yeah.
I don't know who it is. Sounds pretty good to me.
Pop
Welcome
evil.
Back. We are, pardon me?
Pop Evil.
Oh. Pick some of that up. It's Radioactive Sports. Ben Holson, Superstar Mike Morris, and, of course, we mentioned as we went into the break, Tori Hunter. Had a little trouble on Twitter, social media.
A little bit. I didn't really necessarily understand what he was trying to say, especially when he, here's what he said. Here's what he tweeted out. And this is what I didn't understand, the backlash. Tori Hunter tweeted out about Floyd Mayweather. Don't let emotions clog your judgment. What Mayweather does in the ring is business. What he does outside the ring has nothing to do with me.
Okay, that's safe. That's safe enough to say, but...
But I think...
What he's been doing by, like, just leave him alone. Let him do what he wants to do.
He didn't go on to endorse anything. I think what he said on Twitter originally was he was picking Floyd Mayweather to beat Manny Pacquiao, which...
Okay, I think we all did.
Obviously, we got a little backlash from fans because I think most people wanted Manny Pacquiao to win because he's the underdog and...
He's a more likable guy. 67% at the beginning of the fight.
Yeah. And because of what Floyd Mayweather has done, I mean, he's been convicted of domestic violence several times. Hunter offered an apology and then explained later yesterday, saying he was taking Mayweather's history of domestic violence into consideration when tweeting, and he was purely focused on Mayweather the fighter. He said, quote, "All I was saying is he's a great fighter. I don't agree with domestic violence. That's stupid. That's the dumbest thing ever. If I see somebody fight his wife or his girlfriend, I would probably help them. I was just having fun and whatever, and somebody took it way too far. I apologize if I offended anybody, but there's no way you endorse domestic violence. That's stupid. Just because I go for Floyd Mayweather and choose that he was going to win it, that's all I said."
No, he didn't.
"I said what he does outside the ring doesn't have anything to do with me and my decision."
He shouldn't have included that in what he was going to say about the fight then.
"That's what I should have said, my decision on who is going to win."
That's where he should have left it. I said, going into the break, you asked me one word. I said, careless. That's all. I like Tori. I know he's a good human being. I know that he doesn't condone domestic violence.
But that's what people were saying over the weekend.
But be careful, because he led everyone to think, yeah, about Floyd. You know, the business is business in the ring. And it's also his business, his own private business. Leave him alone in his private life, too. That was, he's beating his wife in his private life. Are you... What do you mean? Leave him alone? Let him take care of things the way he wants to take care? That's what it sounded like.
But not to
and
me.
And then he had to come back. He had to come back and rephrase everything. And it's a little bit of backtracking. And I like the guy. I love Tori Hunter. I know him.
But don't you think people are just waiting to pounce on Tori Hunter because he had the whole prick thing with Mike Berardino? And then he also had that coming. But he also had the same-sex marriage deal, which is what Mike Berardino was originally asking him for.
Correct.
So if just because he has disagreements with what probably the majority or what this article was saying, being on the right side of history, being in support of same-sex mm-hmm. marriage, which Tori Hunter isn't because of religious beliefs. And I mean, everybody has their own thing.
To each their own.
So people are looking to nail Tori Hunter. They're looking for any possible misstep.
You have to be careful if you're going to go out and say things, though. Especially things, look, religion. Now you have same-sex marriage. You have the Bruce Jenner. I don't care what it is. Politics. Careful. You're gonna light a fire, and they're gonna be on you. You can't win. You cannot win trying to say something like that.
So how could he have said this instead of "Don't let emotions cloud your judgment"? What Mayweather does in the ring is business. What he does outside the ring has nothing to do with it.
He could have gone on with "Just relax. He's paid his dues. He pled guilty to domestic violence when they brought it up in the court system." And he could have said, "Look, he's paid his dues. Let's concentrate on tonight's fight. I think he's better than Pacquiao," whatever you wanted to say. But back to business. He's back in the ring. And then phrase it the right way. Just be careful. Be careful. Don't just go on and make it sound like just leave him alone. He's going to take care of business at home. Unfortunately, he's going to take care of business at home the way he does in the ring.
People are too sensitive.
They are, so don't do that.
Well, why do people have to be so stupid and say, when he go and he apologized and went on to say,
read exactly what he said on his reply to sort of the rebuttal.
All I was saying is he's a great fighter. I don't agree with domestic violence. That's stupid. That's the dumbest thing ever. And I couldn't agree with him more. He went on to say, if I see somebody fight his wife or his girlfriend, I would probably help them.
Right.
I was just having fun and whatever, and somebody took it way too far. I agree. I apologize if I offended anybody, but there's no way you endorse domestic violence. Why would anybody even be thinking that he's endorsing that?
He didn't say he was endorsing it. Be careful how you phrase things. Be careful how you phrase it, though. Because people can make it sound as if though you endorsed it. I clearly know that he doesn't endorse domestic violence. You do too. But he said what he was going to say about the fight. Pick whoever you want. I don't care. You pick this guy. I don't care what your choice is. I'm not going to get mad at you for liking Mayweather better. But don't go on to say, and don't be judgmental. Let him do what he wants to do with his private life. Because that means, look, you take care of your house. Let Mayweather take care of his house. Well, wait.
But what Mayweather does outside of the ring has no effect on our lives or Tory Hunter's lives.
None.
And so basically, if we were on the show on Friday, for example, and we said we think Floyd Mayweather's going to win, because I think it's obvious that Floyd Mayweather's going to win, and somebody calls up and says,
I said that too.
Can you root for a guy that's been convicted of domestic violence? And so my response would be, listen, Floyd Mayweather, and I'm just going to use extra words, Floyd Mayweather's a better fighter in the ring. That guy in the ring, he's amazing. But don't let any of that outside the ring stuff cloud your judgment, because
that's fine to say it that way.
That's his own life. But in the ring, boom. And I feel like that's what I read this tweet when Tory Hunter first did. I read it live.
And then you don't think it's even a little dicey? You don't think it's even a little bit gray?
Nope.
I do.
I don't think so.
I think it is. Say what you want about the fight. Just say, look, that's been done with. They've handled that. You know, law took care of that side of things. Let's just keep it about the fight. I think Mayweather's going to beat Pacquiao. And he could have said the same thing that he wanted to say and not have any trouble.
Yeah, you're right. He should have said it more clear. But, I mean, as I'm reading this and I read the tweet live, I didn't think anything. And then, obviously, I saw the backlash and the responses to it. And I was like, what are these people doing? They have way too much time on their hands.
Well, they do.
Throughout the fight and do all this stuff, and they're constantly tweeting this and that. I mean, how do you enjoy the fight or a baseball or a hockey game when all you're doing is tweeting?
I couldn't agree with you more. You got to put it down and just watch. You might have something you'll come up with about the fight or about a football game. I do it all the time with football.
I'd rather watch the game or the fight instead of tweet about what my feelings are. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is.
And why did you bring that in? Why didn't you just say something about
the fight? Because he was getting backlash already about the fact that he was choosing Floyd Mayweather. And so he was already responding, basically, saying, he's great in the ring, whatever, that has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
I would not have acknowledged anything about what people were saying about, I don't really care for the way he handles things at home. He tried to settle him down. Just don't worry about what he does at home. But then you start.
But he didn't say it like that.
Okay, how do you say it?
He said, what he does outside of the ring, what he does outside the ring has nothing to do with me.
So same thing. I'm just.
Real quick, 30 seconds. We have 30 seconds. Josh in Minneapolis. What's going on? You're on 105 The Ticket.
Thanks, guys. What the irony and what's funny to me is that he didn't think that way. He doesn't think that way about same-sex couple. You know, don't worry about what they're doing. They have nothing to do with what they do. It's on their own or by themselves or in their own with their families. He lets Floyd Mayweather do it when he doesn't care. You know, if it's something with domestic abuse, that's okay. But he doesn't see the irony in thinking that you should leave it alone if it's something like same-sex couple. So
right.
I mean, I can't believe how you could see he's leaving himself open to that then. To me, it seems like he just got a blind side there, but that's my take on it. It's kind of ironic coming from him.
No, it definitely is. There are many levels of this whole deal, but I just don't understand the whole backlash and why everybody's piling on. But I think Josh is absolutely right. He did leave himself open.
He did.
And especially with his track record of saying things and
being
a little bit more conservative in thinking.
That's
which is fine. That's his right to do that. We're in America. You can think and say what you want to.
He's very vocal. He's very out. He'll go with a little outburst of something.
And it's his right to do that.
But then you have to pay the piper. And now he catches himself and has to go back and apologize for things. He clearly had to apologize there because he laid himself wide open and he got sideblinded.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Damn it.
People just need to have a fresca and take a nap.
Fresca, indeed. I love that stuff. It's the best soda pop ever.
Thanks for listening, Josh. We appreciate it. Have a good week, man.
Thanks, guys.
Very good.
Dane Brugler.
I can't wait for Dane Brugler. He is good at what he does. Ranked number one, Dane Brugler against CBS Sports, highest rated mock drafter by 247sports.com. With a score of 91. We'll talk more about that and what all that entails right after the break.
Very excited about this year's draft class. Our first fourth round pick, TJ Clemmings. You know, everybody's questioning about, you know, the injury part. We did a lot of calling on him and double checking and triple checking today. We feel that it was an old injury that was there. It was discovered at the combine. Did not miss any practices during the year. We're very excited that we were able to get a guy of that caliber, of that talent, where we were able to get him in the fourth round.
Me too.
I got it. That's the first one out of the chute for me. When you have someone on like Dane Brugler, and we have him on again, and we've had him on everything leading up to the draft. I mean, it's fascinating. He's a senior NFL draft analyst for CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com. Dane Brugler joins the show, and my first one out of the chute. What do you think of TJ Clemmings, and what sort of value did they find with that young man at number four?
Well, obviously, the injury, you know, the stress fracture in the foot, that's really what it comes down to. And if it proves to be that it is nothing more than an old injury and he doesn't miss any time moving forward, then it's an absolute steal. It's a highway robbery to get him outside the top 100 picks. He's a first-round talent. And I think most people know about his story moving over from defensive end 2 years ago, a player that – you love what you see on tape. You see the potential. Now, he went to the Senior Bowl and had a rough week, and I think that really poisoned the minds of a lot of people on TJ Clemmings. But nonetheless, his tape shows a first-round player, and the injury scared some people, but that could end up being a blessing in disguise for the Minnesota Vikings getting TJ Clemmings so late.
Yeah, we were both excited to have him fall to the Minnesota Vikings in the fourth round. There's a little bit of an argument between the superstar Mike Morris and I about where he will play in the NFL. Will he be a day one starter at left guard for the Minnesota Vikings is the question I have for you.
I think he should have that opportunity to compete for that job. I think that's where I think he's best at right tackle long term. But I think initially as a rookie, absolutely, he could compete to be a guard in the NFL. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win that job, but just that, you know, he hasn't played guard, doesn't have a lot of experience there, but I think he should be in the mix to compete for it. I think he could do it, and I think that it'd be tough for someone to beat him out.
I do too. I do too. I mean, Ben showed me the first highlights I had seen on the kid, period. I didn't see him play at Pitt, didn't know anything about him, which is normally the case with us out here, outside of you, Dane. We know that you know him and probably have been following all of these guys since high school, probably. But I hadn't seen him, and I took about three or four different highlights, and I thought, wow, that kid can play. He has great feet. He gets up. He gets around on a wrap block. His hands are perfect placement on who he's blocking. He finishes. He's a mauler. He's aggressive. Good feet, though. Number one. Good feet. Now, anyone that can play right tackle can probably come over and play some guard. It's going to be tougher, though, if he isn't a natural in a left-handed stance, though. I mean, that's a different thing. It's a different way of thinking when you have to put your other hand on the ground and play off the left side if you've been used to playing over on the right side. The good thing, though, I think about him, though, is he's so new as an offensive lineman, I don't know if it matters or not. And he was so coordinated being a defensive lineman, they can do anything. Those guys can do damn near anything, so it may not even matter to him.
Right, and he, quote-unquote, hated the idea of playing offensive line in high school. He didn't want to do it. And then he goes to Pitt, and he was a defensive player for the first 3 years. And then he, during bowl practices as a sophomore, the coaches went to him and said, hey, what do you think about moving over? And he bought in. And so for the last 2 years, he's been starting right tackle, started every game the last 2 years. And he is still new to the position. He really only has 2 years of experience on the offensive line playing offense. So that, glass half empty, half full. Just, you know, he hasn't done it so long that he could potentially make the move inside. And when you look at him, the broad shoulders, the body girth throughout, he'd love to abuse defenders in the run game. And so I think he should be able to compete for that guard position early in camp.
Talking Vikings draft with senior NFL draft analyst for CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com, Dan Brugler. A lot of people know about the first and second rounders. Mike and I talked about Trey Waynes. We talked about you. Talked about Trey Waynes with you several times. Eric Kendricks, who was a guy that I wanted the Minnesota Vikings to trade back in the first round and maybe pick up around that 20th spot, but he fell to the Vikings in the second round. What about the third rounder, Danelle Hunter, the defensive end? What do you know about him?
Yeah, Danelle Hunter is actually the youngest player in this draft class. He does not turn 21 years old until October, late in October. And so, you know, 3 years at LSU, 2 years starter, the production's not overwhelming. Had only 1.5 sacks last year for the Tigers. And so he needs work as a pass rusher. He's still, you know, kind of scratching the surface of who he can be, but you see the potential. You see the cat-like quickness, the hustle. He can really disrupt things, and he sees it. You can tell that he understands what's happening, and he can flow with the action. And so the instincts, the anticipation, they're raw. They're still coming along. And so he's just very undeveloped at this point. You wish he would have went back to LSU just to get better acquainted with you know, what he's going to expect at the NFL level. So it's good that he's going to a situation in Minnesota where he won't be asked to, you know, step in from day one and be a starter. He can learn. They can bring him along at his own pace. I love the run awareness. I love the motor in pursuit. I think, you know, he had 73 tackles last year, which is a high number for a college defensive end. So I'm excited for his future, but, you know, Vikings fans just shouldn't expect too much too early from him.
I think he looks unbelievable. I mean, I the way he was playing on highlight reels, and, of course, we're just seeing the highlights. They also mentioned some of his stats and some of the low points in those stats, and that being his sack total from last year. But he's a fascinating kid to look at, and he looks like just this huge toy they can have for a couple of years to just hone into their system and teach him the way they want him to play football, not have to break too many bad habits that he's had before in the past, because he doesn't have that many yet. He's just so raw. This kid's going to be a player, a lot like Everson Griffin, and I think someone's already mentioned that he's kind of like that. Well, he's taller, but he's got the same body type as Everson Griffin, just cut and chiseled. And I'm waiting for this kid just to start learning and picking up his football IQ. I think he's going to be a machine out there. I really do. And I wasn't that excited about Crichton from last year. I'm more excited about this kid already.
Yeah, and, you know, at 6'5", 252 pounds, I question how much bigger can he get. You know, is he already tapped out in terms of his growth potential? Can he put on another 10, 15 pounds of muscle? That's something to watch, just how much more muscle he can put on. But like I said, a young kid, literally the youngest player.
There you have it right there. You just answered it right there, Dane. I mean, he's 20. Not going to be 21 until October. He can put on 20 pounds. In the next 2 years. No, yeah, he will be able to. No trouble. No trouble at all. I guarantee it. And I'll tell you another thing is, I think that he's going to be the kind of player that you can play even inside. I'm wondering just how big he really can get, where he would actually be able to slide down and play some under tackle someday.
Yeah, a good young player that, and there's no question that his ceiling in terms of football, where he'll be is so high, and you know, where he is right now is not where he'll be in 2-3 years. So it's really going to be fun watching the development of this player, because he does have such a high ceiling, and he's a motivated kid. You talk to him, he has a very reliable football character, just a good way about him. So it's a very promising pick. One of the reasons I thought the Vikings had one of the best drafts this year, the two picks we just talked about, the third and fourth round picks.
Wow, we're talking to Dane Brugler about the Minnesota Vikings and the draft over the weekend. Senior NFL draft analyst for CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com. We're so excited and grateful to have you as part of the team and a friend of the show. And now it's time to toot your own horn just a little bit. You were rated the highest mock drafter by 247sports.com. You had a 91 points, 9 draft picks completely correct, 29 out of 32 projected first rounds drafted. How does that feel to crush Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, Mike Mayock? I mean, everybody that's anybody in the mock drafting world, you completely dominated this year.
Well, you know, I take more pride in my reports and, you know, watching talent, but no, it does feel great to, you know, score so well in the mock draft. I think I was one of the only ones to have Brandon Scherff, number 5 for the Redskins, and a few other ones, and I had 9 exactly right, and I actually had 2 other ones that were with the right team, but it was kind of a trade-up. Melvin Gordon with the Chargers and then Ray with the Broncos. And so I got those two right as well, but just not at the right pick, but to the right player or to the right team.
That's amazing. I think it's amazing. And I want you to rate the drafts from team to team. Give them a letter grade and come back and join us sometime when you can tell us where the Vikings kind of stack up with this entire... Unless you kind of know already in your head and you've sort of done that already. How do you think the Vikings have done in terms of a letter grade or being one of that upper echelon the drafts of this 2015 season?
Yeah, and the way I do it is I don't do letter grades, but what I do is I go and I examine each team and I pick my five teams that I think did the best in terms of just overall value throughout the draft, and then I do my bottom three. But for my top five, the Vikings were actually number two for me. So I had the Jaguars at number one and the Vikings at number two. And so what the Vikings did, getting Trey Waynes in the first round, Kendricks in the second round, you could argue Kendricks was a first-round player. Danielle Hunter, a guy that, you know, we won't hear about right away, but down the road will be an excellent value pick. Clemmings, we talked about. Pruitt, the tight end in the fifth round. He wrote all the record books at Southern Illinois. If he keeps his nose stay on the straight and narrow, Michael Pruitt will be a player that we talk about. He's an outstanding player. Stephon Diggs, you worry about staying healthy a little bit, but he's a terrific athlete. Reminds me of a better version of Ted Ginn. Tyrus Thompson, the offensive tackle out of Oklahoma. He can be a swing tackle, someone that you get in the sixth round, terrific value. And like all these players, I think value is the first word that comes to mind.
Sure.
Because where the Vikings were able to get these guys, and that's the whole draft. You know, you want to get good players, but you also want to maximize the draft pick, where you're able to get them, and I think the Vikings did both of those things.
I do, too. I think it was a great year of draft for the Vikings. Last year, I mean, the last 2 years have just been so impactful, I think, on this club and how well it's going to do. If we can just stay healthy, that'll be the big difference maker. Is all those people we have on paper, if they can just stay healthy and let Bridgewater continue his growth, I think we'll be in pretty good shape. I really do.
Yeah, they did a great job. What, 10 draft picks this year? I mean, hopefully all 10 make the roster, because all the 10 guys they drafted are the types that are going to be pushing the guys on the current roster. And so, 10 guys that are in the pipeline for the future. And it's really if I'm a Vikings fan, I'm really excited for what happened over the weekend for my organization.
Dane, it's unbelievable every time we have you on. It's just very informative. Your knowledge is impeccable. So we love having you on. We'd like to be able to follow it up a little bit here too sometime. And as things sort of work through it with mini camps and OTAs, we'd like to be able to give you some report on how these players are turning out.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to join you guys. My 2016 mock draft already up. So
jeez.
Good Lord, really?
Come on, who do we have? Who'd we get?
The Vikings, let me see here. What I did was going based off of this past order in terms of, we didn't have to redo the entire order. Just went based off of last year's order. And the Vikings, I believe, Sean Oakman, the defensive end out of Baylor, the big 6'9", 280-pound monster, the Oak monster out of Baylor. So looking so far in the future. But it's fun to look at who the players could be that we're looking at this year.
Wow.
Very fun. Thank you, Dane.
All right. Anytime, guys. Thanks.
Take care.
Dane Brugler.
Love that guy.
He knows his stuff, and I was really excited to hear what he had for us about Clemmings and Hunter.
Me too.
I think that those two are going to play, and they're going to play more than people think. Maybe not so much Hunter, not quite yet. But 252, 20-year-old, oh my God!
I'll take
That kid's going to get so big. It's unbelievable. Let's come on back with Jim Rich, see what he thinks, and see if he has any hope, any prayer for the Minnesota Wild to advance on to the next round. I don't know. Jim would know, though. Just got back from Chicago. We'll go and talk with Jim Rich next.
Houston, we...
Playoffs?
mistakes. I don't know what team played that game, but it wasn't us tonight. You know, it was 0-0 through the midway point of the game, but we were doing some things okay without the puck to keep it at 0-0, but we were with the puck. It was, like I said, that's not us.
We all want to be Jim Rich.
I do.
But he's not answering his phone right now. I wonder if he's just as disappointed with the Minnesota Wild as we are. Or maybe he's on the side of the road in Wisconsin. His car broke down. You never know with Jim Rich.
Anything could have happened. The good thing is he's got about 8 or 9 parked out in the backyard. If he ever gets back home, he'll have wheels.
Jim Rich, how are you?
What I do is I tow them all in a big line. And then as the first one breaks down, I just get in the second and keep going and hauling them on. And then they're kind of spread out across Wisconsin. So I can just grab another one and just keep going.
Yeah,
and
you're enough.
Sure enough, that strategy worked this time.
So,
I'm back.
Yeah, you are back. How did that happen? Game 2 last night, just awful. Really. One of the worst Wild games. I mean, it's not 6-1 loss like they lost to the St. Louis Blues here at the XL Energy Center, but last night's game was definitely disheartening. Superstar Mike Morris still thinks that the Wild will win in 6, meaning they're going to rip off 4 in a row.
Yep.
I think the Minnesota Wild are done in 5. I think they'll win 1 at the XL Energy Center, but this last weekend, from a team that I thought that the Minnesota Wild could hang with finally, because the Wild were so deep, they've got speed, they got a great goaltender. They just don't have what it takes. What are your thoughts, Jim? Because you're the end-all, be-all when it comes to Wild hockey.
Well, it's kind of like what I said going into this series, is that the Hawks have the experience. They know how to play this time of year. They won a pair of Stanley Cups. Kane and Taves were the catalyst to those championships, and those guys were the story in those first two games. The Wild big players didn't answer the bell, like Chicago's did. I mean, last night, 2 hideous mistakes defensively. Ryan Suter just had a horrible night, and I feel so bad for him because, you know, he's obviously wants to do well, but the short-handed goal, he coughed it up in the neutral zone, didn't think Hossa was right behind him. That led to virtually a 2-on-0, and then you had the other play where he gets caught up ice, and he leaves Patrick Kane alone behind him. I mean, anytime 88 is on the ice, you've got to have your head on a swivel because he'll sneak away, he'll float out there by the other blue line, and he waits for those. And his teammates know that he makes himself available. Duncan Keith fired that pass right to him, and it's over. It's in the net. As far as Dubnyk, I mean, he could have been better, but those first 2 goals he really didn't have much of a chance on, nor the 3rd one by Patrick Sharp. I mean, you can't give up those kind of chances. And Corey Crawford, from whatever reason, was supposedly so bad against Nashville, he apparently has amnesia because he's forgot all about that. He was tremendous last night when the Wild did get a sniff.
Well, so, I mean, we've seen this kind of thing happen before, Jim, especially in the St. Louis series where they get drubbed pretty good 4-1. Another game was 6-1. But they come back, and I mean, in flying colors, too. I mean, do you see anything like that happening back here where we can rejuvenate this thing and pull it together and get something done here at home?
I think so. I think they'll be more comfortable back here. I think the crowd will help them. I think that'll perhaps rattle the Hawks a little bit. But, you know, what I think is that the strategy going into game 2, all the sound that we got from the locker room after game 1 is that we need to play faster. We need to use our speed. We are faster than Chicago. Well, they didn't look like it last night. We may overall have team speed that's faster, like faster skaters, but Chicago moves the puck faster than the Wild can skate. And that's more what it was like last night. They were chasing. They didn't get set up in the offensive zone. They dump it in, and there was only one man there. Chicago would come right back out. They weren't able to bottle them up consistently to give themselves offensive opportunities.
Yeah, we're talking to Jim Rich from Fox 9 about the Minnesota Wild in this second-round series against the Chicago Blackhawks. It seemed like once the Minnesota Wild would make a stupid mistake, the Blackhawks would convert. And once they have the puck and they're on a breakaway, it's a game over, really. I mean, I'm just sitting in my house saying prayers for Devin Dubnyk going, oh, God, please, anything. I mean, it's going to be a miracle. I feel bad for the guy back there because with the breakaways, they're just unbelievable. They're so crisp. Like you said, they're so fast. Why isn't Matt Dumba, who turned the ball or turned the puck over in the defensive zone a couple of times where I was like, oh, my God, what are you doing? So many silly mistakes. But why that shot of his is so debilitating? Why isn't he taking more instead of passing, especially on power plays?
Right. I was saying the same thing watching from the press box last night. Give it to Dumba. Either he'll get it on goal or he'll hurt someone. And that'll thin out the people in front of the net. They're not going to stand there where that bomb keeps flying in there.
They kept passing.
You know? Right. And, you know, I don't understand it either. I really think, their power plays had success in the postseason. But, you know, this is a different animal. This is a different kind of a team. But the problem is, if it does get blocked, you see how quickly Chicago transitions to offense. And all of a sudden, they're going the other way on a two-on-one. So he's got to be very careful of where he picks his spots to try to thread that thing through. But, you know, Dumba was pretty good again last night. And, you know, the kid's learning. This is his first step off the deep end of the pool. He's in water that he's never been in before, playing in front of a crowd like that and going against world-class athletes. You know, when we talk about and Kane, or Taves and Kane, those guys, not only are they, like, among the best of the NHL, they're world-class. They're the best in the world. That's how talented those guys are. And that's what the Wild have to deal with.
I agree. I mean, at playoff time, those kinds of players, they are playing their best when their best is expected, and they know it, and they rise to that.
Exactly.
And we have a couple guys that we signed that should be more like that. I hate to say it, but I mean Suter, Parisi always does. He's not done. He's not done yet, and he'll show himself before this is all said and done. And I think Dubnyk has answered the bell several times. Even when he got slaughtered a time or two, he always seems to come back with the right attitude.
He's allowed 8 goals, though, in the first 2 games. I mean, that got Corey Crawford pulled in the first round against the Nashville Predators for the Chicago Blackhawks. So my question for you, Jim Rich, talking Minnesota Wild, is Devan Dubnyk falling off just a little bit, or is it the sloppy play in front of him that's really been the problem? Because 8 goals in 2 games is completely unlike him.
Yeah, and let's put it this way. He hasn't been remarkable. You know, he hasn't been, you know, stealing games for him. Yes, he could be playing better, but I think also his teammates have hung him out to dry on quite a few of those chances. You know, you look at what happened in game 1. Those were glaring turnovers in front of the net. You know, what's he going to do? Game 2, same thing. You give up a breakaway. You give up a shorthanded 2-on-0. Odds are good it's going to end up in the back of your net, no matter who you have in the net. And you look at last night's game, after the Hawks made it 1-0, the Wild came back with 2 great chances. Matt Cook set in Kyle Brodziak, point blank, partial breakaway, Crawford makes the save. Then Dumba unloads a rocket, Crawford makes the save, Zach jumps on that rebound, and it bangs right off his pad. If either of those went in, it's a different hockey game. And that's what happens this time of year. And you can't get frustrated. You can't say, oh, my God, we got to change everything we do. We got to put in Kemper. We got to just throw all the lines, rip them all apart. We got to put Suter in the press box. We got to put Nate Prosser in. No, you just have to maintain, because you realize we wouldn't be here if we didn't know what the heck we were doing. And you just have to settle down and get back into that style of play.
I agree. I mean, it's their style that we've tried to emulate for a couple of years now. We're finally there. And I think you just have to get better out in front of Dubnyk. I mean, you just have to protect your goalkeeper a little better, like you have been for most of the last half of the season. I think we'll get back on track, you know. But, hey, look, yeah, we got a pretty tall order in front of us right now to get back in this thing. Jim Rich, thank you so much.
Good to have
for joining
you back
the show.
On this side of the earth, too.
Oh, it's terrible going across that enemy territory. It's just, as soon as you cross the line, you start hearing polka music on every radio station, and every barn is painted green and gold, and you're just like, really? Come on. And you just speed to try to get through there, and it's only 65, so they're hiding behind every bush trying to get you. It's a tough haul. I think I'm going to Iowa. Going that way next time.
Wow, God's country. Well, listen, we will expect you to be on with us again tomorrow at 5:15.
Well, tomorrow are you going to be down at the XL Energy Center for Game 3? We'll be at Tom Reed's if you want to stop by.
Oh, I will try to make that work.
We'll try and do that, and we'll, you know, if you stop down early enough, I'll grab you a hamburger, and then I'll send you up the street in a rickshaw.
Do you want me to come now? Is that early enough for my hamburger?
Yeah. Why not?
I'll just stay overnight at Tom's.
Just stay right there, and we'll just keep hauling food to you.
Oh, this could be the greatest gig ever.
Yeah, you have the life. Jim Rich, Fox 9, thank you very much. We'll watch you the rest of the evening on the TV on Fox 9. Thank you.
I feel like Flounder. Oh, boy, is this great.
he's the best in the business. Jim Rich. And now, if you thought that was good, everybody, I mean, if you thought Jim Rich was good, Mike Berardino, you want to talk about a treat. Especially after the damn Twins sweep the Chicago White Sox 4 games. This guy is going to, he's always in a great mood, but this time he's just going to be giddy.
You're facetious because you never know what kind of Mike Berardino you're going to get. And let's hope he's in a good mood. But I'm sure we'll set him off and say, ask some sort of stupid question and he'll get pissed.
Yeah, well.
But my guy Eddie Rosario being called up, one of the young guns being called up to the big team and Oswaldo Arcia. Sent down to the DL. He's got a little boo boo.
Oh!
Plus we have Minnesota Twins tickets we'll give away coming up at about 5:45. So don't miss that as well.
Yeah, don't miss it. Come on back. It's Mike Berardino with Hardball.
Information in the head of his, so I'm willing to learn it.
Definitely excited to have him leading the way.
Get your seam head talk right now on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Deep to left field. Cabrera back. Score, it's 6-0. 2-2 to Dozier. Off the middle. And a base hit coming in from third is Herman, and it's a 7-run inning.
Again with the 7-run innings.
I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. And asinine.
It happened twice.
We're finally picking up these damn ball bats and going out and knocking the ball around a little bit. I don't know what's going on, but I can tell you right now, Mike Berardino does know what's going on. He joins the show right now.
Mike Berardino, Hardball.
You do. Yes, you do.
The Twins finally calling up my favorite guy.
Oh, this is this year's favorite guy?
Well, he's been my favorite guy for a really long time. He just hasn't made his way to the big club, and now finally he is. You want to spread the news to all of our peeps? What's happening?
Oh, everyone knows by now, but Eddie Rosario is on his way. Yes. He's going to get to play, not tonight. He's not in the lineup tonight, but he'll arrive after game time. And Paul Molitor says he intends to use him. Sounds like he'll play mostly in left field, but not ruling out a chance to play some center. Obviously, left field's an opening because Oswaldo Arcia is on the disabled list again in his brief career. And this is about the 37th different body part affected. This time it's the hip.
Ooh. That's pretty serious stuff when it's your hip too.
Well, it depends. I mean, they're just calling it a flexor, a strained flexor, the same sort of thing that Phil Hughes had to leave his last start with, and yet 5 days later he's out there. Of course, he doesn't have to track down fly balls and left. Arcia told me he thinks he could be back in 7 to 10 days, but the Twins couldn't wait around, and nor should they, to see how that goes. So this is a good chance. I'm thinking about Danny Santana coming up a year ago at this time, early May, and there was no real sense at that time that he was here to stay, but he ended up staying. Would not shock me at all if Rosario does that, although he is not tearing the cover off the ball down at AAA. He's actually been outproduced by Aaron Hicks, who recently had an 11-game hitting streak. Aaron Hicks is out hitting him. And Josmil Pinto was a consideration here, too, because they could have moved some things around and got Pinto some DH time or some catching time. And he's been hitting pretty well, too, but Molitor went this way.
Let me ask you a question about the new staff. Did they bring in anyone different, Mike, with the strength and conditioning?
No, I think it's...
Is it Roger Erickson?
He's an outsider. He does his freelance stuff and does it at a very high level. And that's Phil Maurer's guy. But I don't know that it's possible, but I'm not aware that Roger works with anybody else.
I'm seeing a lot of difference. Just for whatever it's worth, they look bigger to me. They look better. They've been actually lifted and actually conditioned. Like some of the other clubs you see, the other, like the Twins from the last two or three years to me don't look like a club that has been put together by a strength and conditioning staff until this year. I really mean this too. I'm not kidding.
Well, I think as long as I've been here, which is just a couple of years, Barry Castellano has been the strength and conditioning guy. He's really good.
Yeah.
And he's really, outside the box with some stuff. You know, he's got, Kenny Vargas told me yesterday he's lost 6 pounds since the season started. He started the season about 285.
Jeez.
And he's down to 279. And I complimented him on his fine base running throughout the Chicago series. That was one of the stories of that weekend, of that sweep, was Kenny Vargas just kept picking up extra bases, and nobody, well, he got thrown out once, but he had a very good series running the bases. And he credits Perry for the extra work they do virtually every day, which involves football, actually. They have a, I've tweeted about this. I've taken pictures. I have some video, but it was too grainy. It was too far. Mm-hmm. But you imagine Kenny Vargas running pass patterns like a tight end, while a teammate or Perry throws him a Nerf football. They specifically use the Nerf because they don't want to put too much strain, especially on those pitchers' arms. But
right.
The Nerf is about roughly the same weight as a baseball. But no, they do that a lot. They're backpedaling. They're going side to side. They're doing DB kind of stuff. They're doing pass patterns. Sometimes they even cover each other. And a guy like Ryan Pressly, for instance, who's a very good high school football player down in Texas, of course, it's kind of mandatory. You'll see him out there. He's kind of the star of the show. Tommy Malone even was doing that before they sent him out. He would do that between starts. So maybe some of that is factoring in.
Mm-hmm. They look good to me. And Joe Maurer, don't forget, pretty good football player.
Yeah, Joe Maurer, he can do anything, though. He was a 4-star athlete, I think, coming out of Creighton-Durham Hall. Talking to Mike Berardino, Hardball Twins Baseball from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, brought to you by Nature's Fury, NutriDrink, vitamins never tasted this refreshing. Plus, coming up in probably about 5 minutes, we'll have Twins tickets to give away for tomorrow's game against the Oakland A's. But Mike Berardino, today it's a big day at the ballpark. Hughes the fourth. Forrest, may the force be fourth be with you, whatever they say. But it's Phil Hughes bobblehead night. He starts tonight, looking for his first win. Going to be mayhem down at Target Field. What do they call these things? What are the planes? You're a big Star Wars guy, aren't you? Either of you two?
I'm not. I'm really not. No,
I'm not either.
What's your question?
X Flyer or something? Any of the.
What? Have you been drinking a lot?
No, I haven't, but Star Wars. I mean, it's a big Star Wars night at Target Field.
Yeah,
so what are those damn plane things called?
Just call them hang gliders and have it done with. Just make up something.
All right, may the fourth be with all of you.
Ah, crap the bed.
I don't know if those Comic-Con people are still in town, but they were here.
Yeah.
And I think they chose this date on, specifically to take advantage. I don't know if those people have ever gone to a baseball game. I perhaps they'll call your show now and yell at me, but, I just think the idea of, the classic Twins fan colliding in the seats here with the Comic-Con people who dress in, special garb, all it as they go around the country, doing whatever they do at these conventions. It's just fascinating to me. And I just hope that, nobody gets hurt.
Well,
Starfighters. What about the A-Wing, the B-Wing, the Vulture Droid? I mean, come on. There's a long list and you should know all of it. Y-Wing, the X-Wing. I think it was the X-Wing was what I was trying to think
of. Of course. I should have known.
The Z-95 Headhunter. I mean, how can you not know what these are, guys?
I can tell you right now, I know that if Mike Berardino went down there dressed up, he'd be freaking Darth Vader for damn sure. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that much.
He doesn't even need to dress up and he's Darth Vader.
And he's just mean. Just mean to everybody.
I'm more of a Senator Palpatine kind of guy.
Okay.
I have lightning bolts coming out of my fingers.
Yes,
my kids watch a lot of the Star Wars. Yeah.
You'd be dangerous with a saber, a lightsaber. Mm-hmm. You're the best in the business.
Thanks, Mike.
You got a good team to cover there. They're coming around pretty nicely. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Take care.
You guys.
Mike Berardino, Hardball, everybody, every day at 5:30. Mike Berardino. I don't know. I think they're bigger. Plouffe looks bigger to me. No, I'm not kidding. I got a pretty good eye for it, too. Hmm. Trevor Plouffe looks like he's been lifting. I'm just saying. I'm not saying. Grand Slam. It's Mike's break. Let's see. Cue up some Soundgarden. Rusty Cage. We'll come back, and we're going to break down some more of this Viking draft. It's fascinating.
And we have twin tickets to give away when we come back.
Oh,
so don't go anywhere.
Yeah, don't go anywhere. We're going to give away those tickets. You wouldn't want to miss out on that.